So, my dear brothers and sisters, I hope that we were able to really listen to these readings today, because they're a good reminder on our Christian journey of the importance of living the Christian life that we have been called to. I want to begin here with the first reading we read from the prophet Zephaniah, and that's a prophet that we seldomly hear from on Sunday, and so on Sundays, his book is not very long, but it's a very powerful book, and I think that it's important that we understand when we listen to Scripture, we're not just listening to words, but they're words delivered in a historical context, which has very much to do with our own life. So Zephaniah is a prophet who is living in a time in which, once again, Israel has abandoned God. So what has happened is, Josiah is a king of Israel, and with Josiah, there's a priest called Hilkiah, who, for a period of time before Josiah is king, the Israelites again abandon God, and the law is lost. It's hidden away somewhere. It's gathering dust. And so what happens is, under the priest Hilkiah, he goes and he finds it. They're searching the archives of the temple, and there, in the corner, they find the law. And what happens is, Hilkiah brings the law out and reads it again to the people. And so what happens with Hilkiah and Josiah as king is that there is a renewal among the Israelites to come back to God by coming closer to the law, by fulfilling what God has given them. And so there's a religious reform in this time. This would be about 640 years before Christ is born. So just to give you some historical context. Okay, so what happens is Josiah has children. Now, Josiah is he does a lot of hard work in trying to bring the people back to God. But of course, he has children, and Josiah dies, and his son, who is 12 years old, takes over. And when the son takes over, he does not continue the religious reforms of his father, and of the priest Hilkiah. So what happens is, he begins to wipe all those away and lead the people away from God. And you can read about this historical context in 1 and 2 Kings in the Bible. It's 1 and 2 Kings is a history, is exactly what it is. It's a history of the different kings of Israel. And it delineates whether you were a good king or a bad king in a pretty simple way. So if you read about the kings, it'll say one king came after another, and then immediately follows, it will say either this king did what was good in the eyes of the Lord, and he reigned for many years. That means that you're going to read about wonderful things about him. He did really great things. He kept the people close to God. The way Kings delineates the not good kings is the other way. It says this king did evil in the eyes of God. And so if you read about Josiah's son, it will say Josiah's son did evil in the eyes of God. And sometimes it won't even name the king if he really led them away. But, you know, you say, well, okay, Father, what the heck does 640 years, 2,600 years ago have to do with me? You know? No, it's actually more than 2,700 years. What does that have to do with me? And why did you just lead me through a 3 or 4 minute boring history? Because it has a lot to do with our life. Because I'm going to dare to say, I'm going to step out on a limb here and say that we have the similar problem that the people of Israel have, which is not just, it's not about just abandoning God. The problem with the people of Israel and what God sends Zephaniah to speak to the people about is their pride. Because what is happening is because they find themselves in a difficult political situation, the kingdom of Israel has been broken into two kingdoms. One half has already been carried off to exile. And the other half that's left is much smaller. And so they find themselves politically in a really difficult situation. It means that anybody who wants can come and pick on them. And so instead of leaning on God, they decide that they're going to lean on the Assyrians, who is the major power of the time, who has a massive army. And they decide that they're going to abandon God and stick with the Assyrians because they know what's best. And I don't know if that's a, I think we should see that as a story as old as time. Because my dear brothers and sisters, our biggest enemy, like the biggest enemy of the people of Israel, is their pride. Our biggest enemy is our pride. The root, if you look at the root of every sin that we commit, if you dig to the root of every sin, you will come to pride. You will come to a very basic thing. I did X because nobody is going to tell me what to do. It's the root of every sin. And in fact, not only is nobody going to tell you what to do, but especially if somebody says, don't do that, all the more we go after it. Because nobody is going to limit me. And I don't know if we really fully appreciate just how deep-rooted our pride is. It's deep. And this is why Zephaniah comes and says, seek the Lord, all you humble of the earth. Seek humility, because how do we fight pride? The only way we can fight pride is with humility. But what do we mean by humility? There's a story about St. Augustine, who is a doctor, a beautiful saint, was a bishop. He writes the book, The Confessions, is a Catholic classic, and I highly recommend that you read it. It's a book on the story of his conversion. His mother prayed many prayers for him. So for those mothers who are praying for their children, don't lose hope. Because if St. Augustine can be converted, so if God can do that with St. Augustine, with the life he was living, you mothers who are praying for your children, have courage. Anyway, so I highly recommend that you read the book of the Confessions. But besides St. Augustine being very holy, he was very smart. And a lot of the book of the Confessions is a little philosophical and gets a little heavy to read because he gets very philosophical. But he writes also treatises in theology. Anyway, he's a very smart man. This is all to say that St. Augustine is a very smart man. So he's asked one time, what are the three most important virtues? And you know, I don't know if you have this experience, but when I was in the seminary and you wanted to ask somebody something of a scholar, the scholar, when you ask them an answer, they never give you the short answer. Okay, there is no such thing as a short answer. Okay, it's usually because it's something in their field, they will usually give you a 15 to 20 minute explanation about whatever your question is. So you would expect that St. Augustine, who is the mind that he is, would go into, and he did this on many other things, a treatise on just the three most important virtues. You know, you'd think he'd write 150 or 200 pages. to answer the question. But he actually gave a really interesting answer to the question. He didn't give a 200-page answer. He gave an answer in 3 points. He said, the first most important virtue is humility. The second most important virtue is humility. The third most important virtue is humility. I'm getting old. Humility. There you go. Now I'm not getting old. Now I can hear you. Thank you. In other words, what is the most important? You would think that St. Augustine would give this drastic answer. It's actually very simple. The route to Christianity, the road to Christianity, is very simple. It's through the virtue of humility. But what is humility? And this is why we read this second reading for this gospel from Matthew. Matthew, now we're going to begin reading this period of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew's chapter 5, 6, and 7, in which Christ gives the roadmap for Christianity. And he begins that roadmap, and Matthew is the one who spends the most time on the Sermon on the Mount. Everybody else gives a smaller version of the Sermon on the Mount because they know that Matthew has already written the long one. And I invite you to spend time every year, once a year, just praying over Matthew 5, 6, and 7, because it really is a very simple way of understanding Christianity and of understanding what we're called to. Now, Jesus, in explaining Christianity to us and in calling us to a deeper relationship with God, he starts off the Sermon on the Mount by saying, okay, he's going to say many things, but he's going to say the first and foremost thing that we need before we can enter into loving your enemies, doing good to those who do evil to you, letting somebody, not only letting somebody slap you on one cheek, but offering the other. Before Jesus can get into any of that, he says all of that requires one thing, humility. It says, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the humble. What I mean by humility is blessed is the one who knows that they need God. Say, Father, geez, 12 minutes to say something you could have said in one sentence, I need God? Yes, 12 minutes, and 12 minutes ain't enough. Because we don't take that very seriously. We don't live that. Because what we live is we live deep, very deeply rooted in our pride. Very deeply rooted in the fact that nobody is going to do anything for me, and so I have to do it. We've been raised that way. Their parents were raised that way. The parents before them were raised that way. Is that the only one who is going to do anything is me. And we carry that into our relationship with God. So much so that we abandon God because we know better. And even when we know better doesn't get us very far, even when that doesn't work, we recognize for 1 minute, you know, that didn't go too well. And 10 minutes later, we're right back there. Because of our pride. Benedict XVI, when speaking on the Beatitudes, he says, the Beatitudes express the meaning of discipleship. What the Beatitudes mean cannot be expressed in purely theoretical terms. That is not just, oh, blessed are the poor in spirit, the kind of the romantic idea, oh, I wish, Lord, I was poor in spirit. Oh, and we, you know, the kind of what I call the kumbaya version of God. But it's not theoretical. It said, it is proclaimed in the life and suffering and in the mysterious joy of the disciple who gives himself over completely to following the Lord. The Beatitudes cannot be theoretical. They must be lived with a profound trust. That's why Jesus says, blessed are they who mourn. And why is somebody who mourns blessed? Because somebody who mourns and knows that God is there in their suffering is blessed. Why is the poor in spirit? Because God knows, because if we know if we're poor in spirit, if we know that we need God, then God is there. These have to be lived. They cannot just be nice words. They are our roadmap to beginning the way to Christianity. Because Jesus, if you can, as we continue through Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the hill gets steeper. Humility is the, we're Coloradoans, so humility is the trailhead. Okay? And on the sign to trailhead is Christianity is an upward battle from here. It's an upward battle to humility. Imagine the battle to Christianity. And all of this is to say, my dear brothers and sisters, in our Christian life, the Lord calls us to truly ask for this gift of humility, to truly recognize that we can do nothing without God, and that God wants to do wonderful things with us if we have the humility to allow God to do it. And so today, as we come to this Eucharist, we ask the Lord that the most important virtue in our life may truly be humility. Let us stand and profess our faith.